Okay, testing, testing.
1, 2, 3.
1, 2, 3, testing. Okay, so I think we're recording this time again. Like, this is the worst thing ever. So we recorded this episode, did all of our things, literally spent like 5.5 hours on like podcast stuff. And then Hannah's on her way back and I realized it's all deleted on accident. So anyway,
we're here.
We're here.
Going with the flow.
We're here. So welcome to our podcast. I'm going to take a quick moment to introduce it because this
We deleted our original episode.
We deleted the original episode like big idiots. So originally, my name's Amy, by the way.
I'm Hannah.
Hannah, welcome. We did an episode together for one of my grad school projects for a Biology in the Age of Technology course. So we did this episode on canine distemper.
Affecting raccoons in the Chicagoland area.
Zombie raccoons, as they're known. And it was a lot of fun. I think we had a good time together, so we decided to make some more episodes.
I hated it. That's why I'm here 6 hours later.
You suck. Okay. So we're back. We're going to, like, try and keep it together here. And
we got this
again. But today we're going to talk about the American robin, the most basic bird of them all. She's so basic.
So basic.
And my dog,
we have a furry friend here.
Yeah.
He's a little cutie.
He's noisy. He literally barks like 50 times, but he's like been in his crate a long time and we feel bad. So I literally need you to get it together.
He wants to hear his
voice. Yeah, get it together. It's fine.
He's like gnawing on a bone too.
I cannot. He has a lot to say about robins. And so do I. So
yeah, Anna, tell us about this basic bird.
I got a lot of info and she's already heard all of it, but it's fine. We'll just go through it again.
I probably forgot half of it.
Okay, fine. Good. Good. So we're talking about these guys because they are the most basic bird, as I said. Super common. We've all seen one. Most of us can ID one.
You would be surprised.
Yeah, at least I know I've met some people that can't ID a robin.
Yes.
So we're going to help with that, hopefully. But they're a migratory songbird. They are part of the thrush family. And the cutest thing I heard, the cutest thing I saw online was the description that thrushes are plump wood-dwelling birds.
So cute.
It's so cute. So you've got a lot of plump wood-dwelling birds out there because robins are the second most populous bird in North America.
What's the most populous?
The most populous one is the red-winged blackbird.
They're so feisty little things.
They are. They're naughty, and I'm sure we'll have a whole episode on them. They're awesome, though. I don't want to say they're like...
Yes.
Yeah, they're great. You know, robins are also considered to be the largest thrush species in North America, the largest land thrush, I should say.
Okay.
Yep. And they can be observed year-round here in Illinois. Of course, those numbers will vary throughout the seasons, but we see them here oftentimes in the winter.
Yeah.
And the cool fact I found about that is a lot of thrushes are like primarily insectivores.
Okay.
So most of those thrushes will live in the lower 48 just because warmer climate means
more bugs.
More bugs. But robins are a little bit different because they can eat also like wild fruits and berries.
Okay.
And having that kind of gives them the ability to live in colder climates where those food sources are going to be available.
Yeah, that's why we see them here in the winter in the West.
Mm-hmm. So it's kind of cool. Cool fact, I didn't know about them. Another thing, they're considered culturally as the first sign of spring. So
I guess that does make sense. You hear them chirping.
Yeah, they've been referred to as, you know, they're very early nesters. They're one of the earliest nesters in the breeding season for songbirds. They've also been referred to as, Batman's where I'm going with this. So Batman's sidekick, Robin.
Yeah.
His name. It's a fun fact I'm going into. Not super pressing or scientific, but he is named Robin because his mom, he was born on the first day of spring, so his mom named him after the bird, which designates the first.
Really?
First bird of spring, if you will. Yes. So, and he's got like that red chest.
Yeah, he does.
The red shirt.
Right.
Yeah. So, if you care about comic books or superheroes, they're just cool. Know that Robins are there too, taking their stance.
I didn't even think about that.
I know.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So, yep. And, oh, do you want to know how to ID a Robin?
Yes.
Wild.
So the best, I don't know about you, mm-hmm. but I've received phone calls of people saying, I need help. There's an injured hawk in my yard.
Yeah, I've heard this.
And they send a picture for an ID, and lo and behold, it's a damn robin.
Yep, it's a robin. So I've also received these calls. Usually it's going to be a robin. Yeah.
Bless your souls. Bless but you're you. Wrong.
Mm-hmm. So just in case you're not super sure, Cornell Lab of Ornithology provides a really nice description of robins. They're described as gray-brown birds with warm underparts. Warm orange underparts.
Warm orange.
They're probably warm because they're like warm-blooded too. But yeah, warm orange underparts and dark heads. When they're in flight, you can see like a white patch on their lower belly and under the tail.
Okay.
They also have white eye arches, so not like a perfect eye ring.
Right. Just like kind of like it doesn't completely encircle white. It. It's
yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And then also females tend to be more drab, so there's less contrast in their feathering. And they kind of look like a little bit more blah than the boys do.
Those poor mothers.
I know. They really get the short end.
But it's not a true form of sexual dimorphism, correct?
Right. Yes, exactly. So don't go off of that to assume who is who and what is what.
I've never tried. I have held robins in my hand.
Yeah.
And I have never tried to determine.
Yeah. I mean, it can, I don't know. It's one way to estimate, but if you're like doing research, there's probably other methods that you're trying to do to sex them. They are considered to be ground feeders. So a lot of times in our neighborhoods and our yards, we'll see them.
Yeah. They're not going to be hanging on your bird feeders. No. They might pick at the debris below them though.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll see them oftentimes hanging around spill off. I know, especially like in the early spring or maybe late in the fall, I'll see robins hanging around my feeders a little bit more because they're kind of running a little low on other options. But yeah, they'll be on the ground. They'll primarily eat invertebrates or insects. The wild fruits and berries are a big part of their diet as well. Let's go back to them being super populated.
Yes.
Yes.
Let's.
So the cool thing is they're considered least concern, which is something we like to achieve for every species.
Right.
Robins do pretty well because they've adapted to urban environments. But they're still protected. It's important to know that you can't own a robin. You can't own their parts. You can't hunt them.
Yes.
They're protected under the Migratory Bird Treaty Act of 1918, which protects all native birds.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
You can't kill them without a permit.
Yeah.
You can't keep them as pets without a permit.
Don't do it.
I've heard about it. It's sad.
Yep. Yep. We've both seen our share of people attempting to keep birds, including robins.
It doesn't go well.
No. Nope.
Most bird cages actually aren't safe. Like,
right.
To inhabit birds, it breaks a lot of feathers. You right. can get some hemorrhaging.
Mm-hmm.
It's yep. really sad.
And it's usually the baby birds.
They fall out of nests. Mm-hmm. People have well intentions.
Yeah.
Want to help feed the baby bird, but then they keep baby bird.
Right. I should probably also describe like what a baby robin would look like.
They're, oh, yeah.
They're going to look like their parents, but of course they're smaller. They're not as well flighted. Those younger birds have like speckles on their chest too. So they'll start to develop the orange, but they have like the black
spots. Tops.
Yeah.
Yeah. All across the chest.
Sometimes they'll have like the fuzzies still poking out of their head. Like the down.
Little alfalfa down feathers.
That's cute.
That's when they're fledglings living on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
When they're nestlings, they're mostly like bald looking birds with a few
they grow so fast,
downy
though.
Feathers here and there. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Always look out for their beak though.
Oh yeah.
To determine especially if you're trying to identify a native from a non-native nestling.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. It's a big indicator. Well, I want to talk about those nestlings a little bit more.
Okay.
Because a lot of the human-wildlife conflict with robins relates to babies. So
tell me more.
Let's talk about what the complaints are. And that would be aggressiveness and territorial behavior.
From the adults.
Not from the babies. Yeah. But it's because they have babies or are trying to make babies. They get super defensive over their area once they've, like, designated a territory and are wanting to build a nest and raise offspring. And this is kind of, like, the most common complaint. You'll get the dive bombers, so the birds that after people walking too close. Usually in those situations, we're like, hey, if you're aware of a nest, give it plenty of space.
Great. Just give it a wide berth.
Yeah. I mean, the babies, once they hatch, they're going to be in that nest 2 weeks-ish.
Then they're on the ground.
Then they're on the ground another 2 weeks-ish. And then they're gone, just like that. Nesting mamas, though, gosh, what was that? I think it's like around 21 days.
I want to say the whole, yeah.
Yeah.
With the incubation.
It's a little bit longer than the actual, like, raising of the offspring. Right.
So they lay roughly, like, one egg every day or two until they have a solid clutch of what, would you say, 3 to 5?
Ugh, I think that's heavy. I think it's, like,
2 to 3?
Yeah.
Okay.
I know, like, the one, I had a robin's nest on the side of my house, and there were 3 nestlings. 2 fledglings. So something happened to number 3, unfortunately.
Aww.
I know. And I overestimated the incubation. I'm getting them mixed up with waterfowl. Like, it's fine. They're usually on those eggs anywhere from 12 to 14 days. So two weeks. Anyway, big tangent. So that's, but you know, like the 6 weeks, if we're talking, that's going to lead to some weird behavior with these guys. They're going to be very
protective over their brood. So yeah. You're going to get dive bombing near the nest for those first 4 weeks. Mm-hmm. And wherever those little fledglings find themselves hopping to, mom and dad are going to be close by dive bombing any person who is close to them.
Yep. I know, like, for myself, even when we got on that side of the house, you'd start hearing them talk right away, like right up in the trees. Like,
oh yeah.
The anxious chirping. And then if you moved any further, they're dive bombing you. And Hannah and I are used to working with birds, so we're pretty comfortable, but we've also been on the end where birds can be very scary when they do stuff like that. So
oh yeah. I was terrified of birds for the first, like, 20 years of my life.
And it's better now, thankfully.
Yeah.
Yeah. We know that they're not actually going to hurt us, but it's effective in what they do. Their intimidation tactics, if you will.
Absolutely. Hey, have you ever returned, like, a fallen baby bird to a nest?
I've personally not.
Oh, I had a fun experience with this recently.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Aww. So my friend was at a park. Mm-hmm. She calls me. Baby bird fell out of the nest. I was like, all right, I'm your girl.
Yeah.
So I come with a gallon of milk. That I had already drank, because, you know.
Okay. A gallon of milk.
Yeah, like, an empty milk gallon container, carton.
Oh, like I'm like, jar. Why are you drinking a gallon of milk in the park? That's weird. What is happening?
Don't put it past me. Anyways, so if you need to make a makeshift nest, if you cannot reach the original nest to put the baby back in, I used a gallon of milk.
Mm-hmm.
I cut a hole into the side of it.
Mm-hmm.
I put a little cup inside of the gallon for, you know, like a pretend nest.
Mm-hmm.
I put drainage holes at the bottom of the gallon of milk. Sorry. And I hung it on a couple of, like, wire coat hangers, a couple feet. I wouldn't get any further than 3 feet, or mom and dad aren't going to determine it's their baby.
Yeah.
So yeah, I got it. I climbed up in the tree. My dog was freaking out the whole time. My friend thought I was an idiot, but, you know, got to save that bird. So I hung this gallon of milk 3 feet away from the original nest site. Okay. I checked back on it a few days later. It was clear the baby had been in there and being fed and well cared for.
Okay.
But it was gone. The whole, like, the nest was empty. The milk gallon was empty.
So we hope that things went well.
Yeah, I would assume so.
Okay. Do you know what kind of bird it was?
It was a robin.
Oh. Yeah. Okay, cool. I know, like, usually their nests, they use mud.
Yeah.
Help build their nests and sticks, of course. So I've read before where they use rainy conditions, and that once you know, like, you get that nice good rain, that's when they have their Their nest building materials. Yes. But yeah, they're pretty opportunistic. They'll usually use like horizontal branches to nest on, but they also use ledges of buildings. It's just like a nice, perfectly round little.
It's a cute little nest.
It's like a teacup. I don't know. It's cute. Yeah. Like one was right on my bathroom window ledge and it was adorable. And like, then you see the fledglings come out and you're like, how did everybody fit in there? Like, it's just.
Oh, I know. That was amazing. Like the stage they were at when I had to return this bird to the nest.
Okay.
So they were close to being fledged. I'm sure they were done like a day later after I put it back. But
Yeah. It was so nice.
Obvious.
Yeah. I definitely
fell out.
Well, I've advised people on it, but I've never been in the situation where I had to do it myself.
Yeah. And you can use like a hanging planner's basket. Obviously, you don't want to put the baby very deep at the bottom where mom and dad aren't going to realize it's there.
Yeah. Or they can't get out. And that's
sad. Yeah. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
And you don't want it to flood either. Hence why I poked some drainage holes in the bottom of my gallon of milk that I already drank.
Look at you. That's awesome.
Yeah, it was cool.
Unfortunate circumstances, but a good ending there for sure. And of course, you know, I've had situations where people try to do this. And of course, mom and dad are very upset. They're going after that person. So.
Oh, yeah. I was being dive bombed the whole time.
Oh,
they never made contact.
Well, that's good. I mean, like in all cases, we should just try to give those nests plenty of space during that like 6 week period, I would say.
Yeah.
4 to 6 weeks. Just give mom and babies lots of space, let her do her thing, because we don't want to cause a situation where she either is stressed out from attacking people all the time or abandoning her nest. That's
because she doesn't feel safe.
Yeah, exactly. So cool. I didn't know that you did that.
It was surprising to tell you.
I know. Another like weird thing that robins do I didn't know about until I worked in rehab was they peck at like reflective surfaces. Glass windows a lot.
Trying to defend their territory.
Yeah.
It's stranger.
Right. I think they just get a little confused when they see themselves in the glass because they don't process glass and mirrors like we do.
Well, most animals don't.
Right. So it's like they're attacking themselves when they think it's somebody else, or maybe, you know, they're trying to get in through your window to get to some plants or something that's reflecting the yard, you know? So in situations like that, especially around nesting period, you're going to see an increase in weird behavior like that. And the best thing we can do to protect them and like preserve our sanity from pecking birds would be, you know, like the post-it notes, newspaper, maybe soap your windows to break up that reflection.
If you know some cute children, have them draw you some pictures, hang them in the windows for the little birdies.
That's a good idea. That's a lot more aesthetic than post-it notes everywhere. But, you know, we're just trying to protect the bird and also make sure that we're able to coexist a little bit more. And thankfully, it's just temporary.
Yeah, just for a season.
Yeah. It's just weird behavior. So, but that's about all I have on robins today. I just kind of wanted to educate a little bit more on them because they're actually super cool. And oh my gosh, I almost totally forgot. Why should we care that we have robins here in Chicagoland?
Oh, this was the super cool fact that I didn't even think about until you mentioned it.
Yeah. So, like, there's tons of them. They don't really need our help with conservation. So why should we really, like, still support them? Well, they serve as an indicator species for the local environment. So because we have so many, it gives us the opportunity to get a really good idea on how healthy the environment is and how certain actions in the environment are affecting bird populations. A good example would be like DDT, the pesticide they would use back in the day.
Yeah.
So there's lots of stories and studies with that in different birds, but there would be reports of large die-offs of robins. And that was kind of like one of the first indicators of the issues with DDT. So.
Okay.
So they helped out with that situation. Robins that live in urban environments are also really good for research when it comes to like measuring pollutants in the air and like how it's being absorbed, not only by animals, but by people. So like they can take measurements of their feathers or their blood and kind of just get a good idea of how they're absorbing. Yeah. Things like lead. I'm blanking. Emissions, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And they're super common bird, but there's a lot more research to be done on them, specifically on their ability to thrive in human-dominated environments, because they've done very well. In fact, there's some studies suggesting that they prefer urban environments compared to like forested areas.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. So they're not as plump little woodland creatures as we thought they were.
They're plump residential dwelling birds. Yeah. They also, you know, definitely want to learn more about how they endure zoonotic disease like West Nile, for example.
Oh, yeah.
So diseases that can be spread between wildlife and people. And specifically, like, what role robins play in that. So are they, like,
able to contract it? Yeah.
Can they contract it? Do they spread it easily to other birds? Like, what's going on with that? So lots to learn about them. We should definitely support their presence and make sure that we keep a nice, healthy population like it is.
Yeah.
Because that's going to help us with science and conservation of not only their species, but other species of birds. So,
cool. Okay. Thanks for sharing.
You are so welcome. And I have to give credit to Cornell Lab of Ornithology, Audubon Society, and the Illinois Department of Natural Resources. Because
All three great resources. Yeah. If you're ever interested, check them out.
We're big fans. We tend to pull a lot of our stuff from those guys, especially when we're talking about birds.
Oh, yeah.
I guess I'll go over the regular closing remarks here, if you will. Yeah. So we've got Twitter, at Cuckoo Podcast. We've got Facebook. We're currently, like, trying to get the Facebook page up and going. I think we're just both a little about Facebook. So, but it's important. It's a good way to reach out. So
yeah.
We're going to try and get that set up and just find us anyway. Like us. Yeah, just like us. Follow that page. We also have a Gmail account.
Yes. Hello, Cuckoo. I'll let you take the lead on that one.
Hello. Hello, Cuckoo Podcast at Gmail. You can reach out to us on that, maybe comments, requests for topics, anything you think might be fun to share on here.
Yeah. As always, we recorded this on Anchor.
Mm-hmm. So we're on a wide variety of platforms at this point. It looks like Spotify, Google,
iOS.
We are on Breaker. We're on a lot of them, and we're gonna post that as well, so you can see on our social media where we're shared. And in addition to that, please be sure to share our platform with those that you love and know.
Yeah, we'd love for others to be more interested about the wildlife that we're interested in. But maybe even just helping everyone coexist a little more peacefully is ultimate goal.
Yeah, that's always our goal here, especially in Chicagoland. We've got a lot of work to do with that. So
thanks for listening, everyone.
Cool. Take care.